In the last few months, we've talked a lot about the effort to legalize recreational marijuana in Connecticut and New York, and while it's not exactly the same, today's subject is somewhat in the same ballpark. Growing hemp in our region and making and selling CBD oil and its possible benefits. That's our focus today. So welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. And if you're like me, you probably have heard about CBD oil. You probably have even seen the shops in the region selling it. Maybe you've used it. Or maybe like me, you have friends have. And like me, you probably have a lot of questions about it. Where does it come from? What does it do? How much does it cost? Does it really work? Or should we all be very skeptical? So today, we'll be talking about CBD and what it is and how it's used and how it relates to our region. But first, we need some background on this. J.D. Allen is with me in the studio. J.D. is one of the reporters here at WSHU, and he also helps produce this fine program. Hi, J.D.
Hey, Ron.
So what is the background? Why is CBD all of a sudden at the top of the list for so many people?
So farmers right now are paying attention to CBD because President Donald Trump in December signed a farm bill. It's a usual bill that gets renewed every 5 years, but it outlines the spending priorities for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That department does things like allocates money for SNAP benefits, which is nutrition assistance, as well as protecting farmland and focusing on what types of subsidies farmers need. But what it also did is that it legalized hemp in all 50 states. Now, some states were already growing hemp in very controlled environments using farmers to...
New York being one of them.
New York being one of them. And now that hemp is legal in all 50 states, they can sell across state lines and they have access to financial services like credit card processing and credit card processing services and other financial services like crop insurance from the federal government.
Hemp has been around forever, and if you read about it, it's well known in the agriculture industry. And
sure, makes great rope, cloth,
absolutely.
Clothing.
Why was it illegal?
It was illegal because of its close relationship to marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
That's what some say. Others are a little bit more cynical about how it could kind of throw other industries into a loop. But nevertheless, it is legal now. And that means that farmers are looking to grow hemp so that way they can enter into what some farm bureaus are saying, like the Connecticut Farm Bureau, for instance, are calling billion-dollar industries.
Mm.
CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry, according to these groups.
And there are a lot of acres in Connecticut and in New York, especially out on the island, that some are saying could be used for growing hemp.
Yes, and there are some on Long Island that are already growing hemp.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already making CBD oil and selling it. They report back to the state with their growing process and what they're finding, so that way the state can better have an eye on what types of regulations might be needed in the future. So you can go into a bodega and find a CBD product that looks kind of gimmicky, or you can go into a wellness shop and find a product that looks like all of the other vitamins on the shelf. And those producers are trying to already get in line with what they're anticipating from the federal government being oversight and rules like from the FDA and the USDA.
Because right now there's a lot of questions as to whether or not you're getting a pure product, a good product, whether or not what is on the label is actually what you're getting.
Sure, sure. And the doors are open, but people are trying to figure out how to walk through it.
J.D. Allen. Thank you, J.D.
Absolutely, Ron.
J.D. was just mentioning about some farms out on the island that are now growing hemp. We're going to bring in one of the owners who's actually doing it right now, one of the owners of a farm out on the island. David Falkowski is the owner of Open Minded Organics. It's over in Bridgehampton. Hi, David. How are you today?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for being on the show. How many acres do you have on your farm?
My farm is about 10 acres total, but I'm what you would call a diversified farm. So I've been for 15 years growing certified organic mushrooms, produce for over a decade, and last year began growing cannabis.
I was on your website a little bit earlier. The mushrooms look, I have to say, pretty good.
We can thank Paul Stamets for initially inspiring me for that one.
So what inspired you to start growing cannabis?
You know, in general, when I got into farming with organic mushrooms, it was really always with a focus and a premise for their medicinal properties, how they could help heal people and the planet. And just a simple way to translate it, when the opportunity was presented by the state to become a grower and a processor, just naturally this was the next step.
And when we say cannabis, we're talking about marijuana, which is different from hemp?
Well, so to be clear, legally, it's all cannabis sativa. And it's that hemp is defined, especially in the 2018 Farm Bill, as cannabis sativa that tests 0.3%, that's 0.3%, THC, the intoxicating compound, by dry weight. So it's all cannabis. It's all cannabis sativa.
And you're making, on your property now, you're making CBD oil?
Yeah, so as we're all trying to clarify what this is, how do we label it, you know, what is purity, what do these words mean, for all intents and purposes, what I'm making is a hemp extract, very much like many extracts people consume, say, echinacea as a dietary supplement. So this hemp extract is full spectrum. So yes, it contains CBD and could be considered a CBD oil. But these hemp extracts are full spectrum until they are distilled or fractionated or isolated in some way. So there's many other compounds that are in play here.
So when I'm looking at pictures of the hemp plant and you're pulling the extract out of it, what part of it are you actually using?
Sure. And so let's just set the record straight here. When we grow hemp and we're growing cannabis, especially for these novel compounds, cannabidiol, CBD, or THC, and many other things, you know, we're growing cannabis for the buds, full of resins, and that's where these compounds lie in concentrated forms. So when you think hemp or industrial hemp, we're not really using the stalk and the leaves and modern extraction methods to get these compounds. You know, we're molecular farmers, and we're extracting these from resin-rich buds.
So you want the buds?
Correct.
Okay. Now, how much does CBD oil cost?
This is like the number one question. It's also the most difficult to quantify. Just like many other commodities, you know, there's a scale on how much and how frequently you buy. It could go anywhere from $6 a gram in high volumes, $5 a gram, all the way up to, say, $100 or more a gram in some sort of retail-ready finished product.
So I have to tell you, the reason I ask that about how much it costs, and then we can talk as the program goes on about, you know, how it works and so on and whether it works, because a lot of people are skeptical. I was down in Florida recently and I stopped in a small shop and he was selling CBD oil. So I spoke with the owner for a short time about it. And a little bottle, I mean, a tiny bottle, like the size of my thumb, was about $75. And I'm not knocking the guy, but the shop was a little, I don't know what the word is, sketchy, if you know what I mean. And I'm thinking I'm about to spend $75 on a small bottle of I don't know what's in there, and who knows if it's going to work, and am I just throwing my money away? So I did not buy it. Is that one of the problems nowadays?
It can be a problem for many people. For folks like myself, it's a great opportunity. You know, so for me, I've been producing food and food products and other supplements in my community for a decade and a half. So I have a reputation of helping people get the information they want, having quality products. So for the just general consumer, it is very difficult. You know, where do I go to find something? How do I read the label? How do I compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges? Even myself, I consider I'm pretty literate on this subject. I even struggle time to time to make sense of things.
And if you're having trouble, I mean, what hope is there for the rest of us?
Well, there's plenty of hope. You know, just like, you know, we've heard people say, and I'll say it again, you know, every time somebody complains, there's an opportunity. And, you know, so the opportunity here is for us to develop language and standards for these things through testing, labeling, and all of this is going to involve increased government oversight, fortunately and or unfortunately.
We have to take a break in about 45 seconds. Just a quick question. Do you use the oil? And if so, what do you use it for?
Personally, myself and my family, it's changed many dynamics for the better. I've had two hip surgeries, my first when I was 13, orthoscopic surgery on my right knee, bent my left knee 180 degrees backwards, stepping out of a piece of equipment when I was 20. Used to be 6 foot, I'm 5'11", I have degenerated discs. At 38, the doctors had me no load bearing, and I was waylaid as a farmer, laid up, and here I am back on my feet, alongside with other things, obviously, diet, exercise, physical therapy, and oversight by an orthopedic oncologist. But it's been a very important tool in me getting well again.
Do you rub it on? Is it an oil that you rub in, or
sure.
Do you
so
ingest this?
We can use it orally, topically, and when you're ready, we can get into a little bit more of the specifics and things we could possibly expect when we use them those different ways.
I'm curious about what you were saying. You not only make and sell the product, you use CBD oil, and as you said, you were injured when you were younger. You've used it, and I think you described it as a life-changing event when you started to use it. And just to clarify, because I know there are many misconceptions about CBD nowadays, does it get you high in any way?
So, CBD in of itself, I've consumed larger amounts of just the isolate, cannabidiol, without really feeling stoned or any such effect. Now, when we have these full-spectrum hemp extracts, there are potentially up to that 0.3%, 0.3%, THC by weight. And if you consume enough of that, it's possible that it could add up, but it's far from the classic stoned or high experience or feeling. It's actually much more clear and motivated. You actually feel energized in many cases.
So it sounds from what you're saying that, look, if you're going to have CBD and if you're going to be using it, you're not expecting to be stoned or high. You're using it to feel better if you have aches, pains, or whatever else.
Yeah, there's a huge long list of things that I have personally seen people use this successfully for. I've worked with several thousand people, say, in the last 12 months. And I've seen nothing shy of miracles. I have seen a handful of people where it's just not for them. Really, a lot of it comes down to finding a quality product and somebody that can help you navigate this so you can potentially get the results that, you know, that you want. Personally, I've seen people with short-term or long-term sobriety using these products safely. Personally, just last week in our shop, we had a local tradesman came in. He was in a bad motorcycle accident years ago. He'd been on eight painkillers a day, and he came in to say thank you and purchased a couple more bottles. He's been able to get off the opiates, and the oil has perceivably just helped reduce the inflammation and pain and enough for him to get back to work and off the opiates.
That's an incredible story, and that's wonderful to hear. David, I'm going to bring in some of our other guests now, and I hope that you can talk with them over the next 40 minutes or so. The first guest that I'd like to bring in is Keber Smith Bolden, who's the president and founder of Canna Health, which is in New Haven. And Keber is also the founder of Women Grow in Connecticut. Keber, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure. When you hear what David says, how do you feel?
I got all excited because he's really talking about things that we know as science and as medicine, and how cannabidiol, CBD is what we're talking about, works. And, you know, it's very ironic. I tell people this all the time, that CBD is actually, the United States has a patent for it. And that patent number is 6630507. And it specifically states that CBD is an anti-inflammatory and that it is a neuroprotectant. So the reason why it works so well is because almost every disease process or infection starts with the inflammatory process. So because of the fact that CBD is so effective that the U.S. put a patent on it as an anti-inflammatory, it really works on a lot of people in a lot of different ways.
Now, are you talking about something that you rub in as an oil, as you know, massage into the skin, or are you talking about something that you drink, take a tablespoon of or something like that?
All of that. So CBD comes in, and CBD and THC are both cannabinoids, and so they can be consumed in several different ways. CBD can be applied topically, so that's good for, you know, the little elderly ladies and their aching knees. Sometimes they find that to be very effective, but it also can be taken in capsule form. It can actually be smoked in a flower form. It can be utilized as a tincture, so you can add it to a tea. It can be vaporized. So pretty much every form can be used for CBD.
Or for some of us men with our aching knees. It runs the spectrum here. Kibra, I'm going to bring in some doctors in just a moment. But let me ask you about Connecticut, since you are in New Haven. I was thinking the other day as we were preparing for this program, Connecticut was for many years known as one of the great tobacco growing regions in the world. And the Connecticut leaf up in the valley is prized for those who enjoy cigars. And I know many of those farmlands, those tobacco farms, are not being used nowadays. It naturally occurred to me that if you're going to grow something like hemp, that's the spot.
Exactly. And I believe, you know, with the farm bill that passed in September of 2018, it affords these farmers opportunities to use this land that is primed and ready for the growth of cannabis sativa, hemp, and or the marijuana version as well. And I heard, I believe it was Dave who broke down the difference. So hemp just means that it has less than 0.3% THC. And marijuana means that there is actually THC in varying amounts,
and
more than that.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be rude. Just to clarify, it is not yet legal. That is recreational marijuana. It's not legal in Connecticut at this point, even though the governor is pushing for it. And I know over in New York, Governor Cuomo is also pushing for it.
No, it is not legal for adult use. It is legal for medical use. And that industry is pretty tight. We have four grow facilities that are indoor grow facilities here in the state of Connecticut that supply both CBD-based products and THC-based products to our 9 and soon to be 18 dispensaries in the state.
There are going to be 18. I didn't know that.
They just licensed 9 additional.
And when will that be happening?
So they got approved in December of 2018, and it looks like most will become operational by summertime, May, June, July.
Okay. Kibra, I'm going to ask you to hold on for one moment. We want to bring in Dr. Mary Androlia, who's a child neurologist at Stony Brook University Hospital. Doctor, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. It's Dr. Andriola.
I'm so sorry for the mispronunciation.
That's okay.
My apologies. You focus on treating pediatric epilepsy, right?
And epilepsy at any age, yes.
Okay. How does what we're talking about, CBD, figure into what you are doing with your practice?
Well, New York State legalized medical marijuana in January of 2016, and I was right from the beginning a New York State authorized, so to speak, doctor to agree that a patient was a candidate for it, and that included about a dozen diseases. Epilepsy is the only disorder that I would treat. I was also familiar with studies ongoing with CBD, with the company Greenwich, with studies being done at NYU, but about a dozen other medical centers across the country. That's the scientific way of proving efficacy or not, a double-blind study where Nobody knows. The doctor, the patient, et cetera, does not know what the patient is receiving. Various testimonials, as we've heard earlier, have the potential for a huge 30-40% placebo effect. So the only way you can prove that something is effective and the FDA will allow it to go on the market as therapy is to conduct these double-blind studies and to have a sufficient number of patients to do it. In the process, I used the CBD provided by New York State dispensaries in terms of recommending the patient and suggesting the CBD 95% plus substance prep. It's made from a plant, so it's never 100% CBD, although some people have been proposing to manufacture it that way. And had my experience with that in November after the FDA approved early last year the Epidiolex, which is CBD for treating two rare epilepsies or two uncommon epilepsies. One's rare genetic Dravet, the other one, Lennox-Gastaut, is a broader category. And potentially other intractable epilepsies, then we began using this. Now, this is something I can prescribe. I never prescribed New York State medical marijuana. That would be against federal law. I recommended the patient, certified the patient, and recommended the mainly CBD and the amounts.
And just for time's sake, you're saying it works?
It helps, in my experience with New York State, and in the studies which allowed it to come on the market, about 1/3 of patients, which means 2/3 are not helped at all, and very few patients become seizure-free.
I'd like to bring in Dr. Fred Latto, who's Regional Director for Epilepsy at Northwell Health in Great Neck. Doctor, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Ron.
Thank you for joining us today. You heard what Dr. Andriola said. What is your experience?
So I've mostly focused on the use of CBD, less on the use of medical marijuana, although I think Dr. Andriola makes a good point in distinguishing between these. For CBD, I agree that the studies show that there's something on the order of 40% reduction of seizures overall. Approximately 1/3 of the patients have most of the benefit. And I think you can't overstate the fact that there is a large placebo effect. I'm also thinking of another study that was done that looked at response to CBD in children with these very difficult to control seizures. And it was a study done in Colorado, which at the time was one of the few states that had approved medical marijuana and CBD. And what they found was similar to this. About 1/3 of the patients reported improvement. But in fact, when you looked at more objective tests, the EEGs, the brainwave recordings in those patients, you didn't see nearly the degree of improvement that was being reported clinically. And what's more, when you looked at the families that were reporting improvement, the families who had actually moved from other states to Colorado to get CBD reported improvements 3 times more often than the families who actually lived in Colorado and hadn't made the decision to move, suggesting that the motivation of the person, the desire to see a benefit of CBD, played a big role in what they perceived to be the improvement.
So
as
others have said in the past, so the brain was working hard to fix the body.
Well, I think the brain was working hard to think that the body was fixed. It's a question of whether I think Dr. Andriola mentioned correctly, I agree, that double-blind studies where the person doesn't know whether they're getting the active medication or the placebo, and the doctor doesn't know if they're getting active medication or placebo, so that neither the individual nor the physician assessing them is biased by whether they think there should be a benefit because the placebo effect is so strong. So I think that I would just bring a note of caution to the enthusiasm that there is, and there's a great deal of enthusiasm. There's certainly data that tells us that CBD can be helpful. Right now, that has been tried out with clinical trials in the most severe forms of seizure disorders. But there's a broader set of data that suggests that CBD might be helpful in anxiety disorders, maybe pain, less clear. Medical marijuana has more data to support it for pain, as well as, you know, possible anti-inflammatory effects, possible neuroprotective effects. But a lot of those additional benefits have been really demonstrated in the test tube or in animal models, and relatively few of them have actually been tested in human populations to look for a benefit. So a lot of it is speculative. We hope that it will be as wonderful as everybody wants it to be, but the reality is usually something in between. More than nothing, but not everything we hope it to be.
We have 1 minute before we have to take a break, and we'll have another 20 minutes after our break. I'd like to bring David Falkowski back in for just this moment. David, have you thought about the placebo effect?
Sure. Sounds like good medicine to me. there's definitely, the placebo effect is real. I think, though, you know, most notable, we need to put things in perspective a moment here. We're coming from two sides. One where perceivably we're working with, say, these dietary supplements, another side for general wellness, and the other side where, you know, we're looking for drugs proven by science and through a very rigorous process, and we need these results in a controlled setting. So like the doctor is just speaking, you know, the answer lies somewhere in the middle. What we need to do, though, is we really need to listen more to this anecdotal evidence, because when I put the pins on the wall, the patterns are deep and clear.
Let's spend a few minutes with Brian Hurlburt now, who's the executive director of the Connecticut Farm Bureau. Hi, Brian.
Good afternoon. How are you?
It's good to have you on the program. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you for your interest in the issue.
So as I was mentioning before, as you drive up 91, and if you know a little bit about Connecticut agriculture, you see where the farms used to be. That grew a lot of tobacco. And the other day, as I'm preparing for this program, I'm thinking, well, if they're going to start growing hemp now in this area, wouldn't that be the spot? Because I know some of those farms have gone out of business. What's the situation now in Connecticut in terms of planning for the future of growing hemp?
We see it as, you know, a lot of those fields that you drive by could be full of hemp, and that would be a great economic boost to the farm economy. We're currently working with the Department of Agriculture, the state legislature, and our congressional delegation to get hemp approved as a legal crop in the state of Connecticut. As many people may be aware, the 2018 Farm Bill legalized hemp only as long as your state adopted and approved a plan. So individual farmers can't just go out and start planting hemp this year in Connecticut without, you know, the prospect of legal recourse.
Mm.
So what we're trying to do is create the legal framework, the statutory approval for hemp to be a legal crop. And we think we've got a great opportunity to do it this year. We've had a lot of support, a lot of interest from Connecticut farmers, from policymakers, from members of the media like yourself who are calling the Farm Bureau and asking, what can we do? How do we do it? And what's the path?
Well, just out of curiosity, why isn't it a legal crop nowadays? I mean, it's not like you're growing it to sell on street corners or something like that, right? It's hemp has been around forever.
Well, that's a great point. And there, I think there was a lot of confusion about what hemp is and what hemp isn't. Hemp is not an intoxicant. Hemp is defined by a very low level of THC, which is the chemical in marijuana that gets you high. So it's always been a safe product, but because of the confusion, because of the concern that you could grow hemp and marijuana next to each other, and most people probably wouldn't know the difference. That, you know, for law enforcement purposes, it was probably just easier to make both of them illegal. But with the approval from the from Congress and the president, you know, we now have a path, and that path could be one of salvation for a number of Connecticut farms. And, you know, we're looking at estimates between, you know, in the low $30,000 to over $150,000 of revenue per acre of hemp. And so, you know, that's a serious business that we want to be getting into.
Just two more quick questions before I bring Kibra back in. What are the chances, or is there anything going on in the legislature this session to change the hemp policy in Connecticut?
Yes, we had a great public hearing last Friday before the Environment Committee about the three proposals that they're considering, which was a nice way for us to demonstrate that there are, you know, farmers interested in this. There are businesses that want to invest in processing. There are processors who want to be able to sell CBD oil, hemp byproducts legally in the state of Connecticut. The governor invested in hemp in his budget that he had released earlier this month or last month, adding staff to the Department of Agriculture and the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station. So we're working through the process. What's important for your listeners to know and members of the assembly and the governor's staff is that, you know, if we need to hit a June 1st planting date, which is, you know, towards the later end of the season,
yeah,
we need to know that hemp is legal soon. You know, today, tomorrow, next week.
It's got to happen fast.
It's got to happen fast so that we have the ability to develop a business, so the farmers have ability to develop a business plan, to finance that business plan, to procure seeds, you know, and to start the process. So from the farm side, say it's a 4 to 6 week window. And from the regulatory side, you know, it's more likely to 60-day process for the Department of Agriculture to get things moving.
Sure.
So we're really, you know, up against the wall here.
Brian, one last question before I bring Kieber back in. If I wanted, just out of curiosity, if I wanted in my backyard, in my garden, to plant hemp right now, am I allowed to do that?
You are not allowed to do that.
So it's against the law. It doesn't matter if it's just a little patch in the backyard or a farm or whatever. You just can't do it.
You can't do it.
All right. Kibra, what do you think the odds are that the legislature will get moving in Connecticut on this?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question again?
Sure. What do you think the odds are that the legislature will get moving on the hemp bill in Connecticut?
I think the odds are good. I'll be 100% honest. My primary focus is the legalization of cannabis for adult use. Specifically, cannabis equity is what I'm working on, which will afford all.
Kieber, can you do me a favor? Kieber, can you
yes?
do me a favor? I don't know if there's a radio on in the background or if it's a TV or something like that, but we're picking something up, or I'm getting something in my headphones. So if whatever's
I'm sorry, someone was overheading. I'm at work.
No problem. Please continue.
But I was saying that my focus has been on the legalization of cannabis for adult use here in the state, and specifically cannabis equity, which will afford all people opportunities to engage in the industry and not make this be a corporate-only entity. However, I am extremely excited about the hemp legislation that has been presented and the ability for Connecticut farmers to engage in this industry, because they are also, you know, a classically disenfranchised group. And so, I feel like there's great momentum and movement. I think the national, because of the federal lifting of the ban on hemp and the descheduling of CBD, I believe all that is going to help to make legislation move this session. So I think we will know, but I did hear what David, was that his name, said about, you know, timing.
Mm-hmm.
And timing is very important, because they're about to miss their window of opportunity to begin growing and this crop, because, you know, we're seasonal here in Connecticut. So
it was actually Brian Hurlburt,
Brian,
who's the Connecticut Farm Bureau Executive Director. But, you know, I think the gist of what he was saying was it's got to happen soon if we're going to get the plants in the ground. Otherwise, it's not going to. Dr. Andriola, are you still there?
Yes.
You've been very patient with us. I know that there are some listeners right now who are saying, look, I've heard about things like this in the past. You know, for years we heard, St. John's wort, we heard fish oil, things like that. How do I know if this is the real deal?
Well, I would say the only way to know if it's a real deal is to have an adequate scientific study, which the gold standard to get it on the market as a medication is a double-blind study that passes muster with the FDA, and the FDA is stringent to allow me as a physician to advise a patient to take it. Now, because of the window New York State gave and the huge interest of patients and the fact that the studies being carried out across the country had a limited number of potential participants, I went ahead and got myself certified and tried to help New York State people qualify, if appropriate. Epilepsy is supposed to be intractable, for one thing, and not like some of the teenagers thought, oh, I'll just take the medical marijuana. It's organic. Mm-hmm. It's safe, and I can just stop my regular seizure meds, which have me controlled and driving. No. So I did it, and I presented about it because the patients were so keenly interested in it. Now, everybody that I had on the New York State as the CBD, I am switching over to Epidiolex and just saying, hey, a lot of patients had a horrible time paying for the stuff because no insurance would cover it, and they were paying some families $600 and $800 out of pocket, killing themselves because they thought it helped their family member. This way, it is not easy to work with some of these insurance companies, but they are basically entitled to it because it's FDA approved. So that's where I see the future. I have no idea of things that you can spread on your knee, or I have lots of old aches and pains, or
you and me both,
drink, or whatever, have any basis in anything but placebo effect.
Dr. Latto, same question, please, sir. How do we know if it's the real deal?
So I think we're kind of in the rush of this enthusiasm for a new treatment, and it fits the pattern of previous sort of peaks of enthusiasm. There's a kind of hype cycle where there's initially this unbounded enthusiasm that this medicine will do anything and everything, and then gradually there's a measure of disillusionment that sets in when it isn't actually the cure for the common cold, or it doesn't make us look 20 years younger, and then that's the trough of disillusionment, if you will. And then gradually what happens is there's a steady recognition of what the medicines are actually good for, and there's a plateau of sustainability. And we're going to kind of be whipsawed a little bit by this overflow of enthusiasm, probably to be followed by a sense of disappointment when the medicine doesn't deliver at the level of our expectations, and then followed again by a realistic appreciation of where it fits into the armamentarium, the tool set that doctors have to treat problems. I think there's a great deal of money involved right now, and that certainly colors how people regard the benefits of CBD. Gradually, that will hopefully shake out with time. So I think CBD is here to stay. There's certainly high-quality data that tells us that it's effective, at least for seizures. I think we'll continue to see more data come in, particularly now that there's a pharmaceutical-grade product. and we'll see it applied to a broader category of seizures over the next year or two. We'll have publications and data on that. And hopefully we'll gradually come to understand how to best use this medication. But its merits are real. It's got real side effects. There are real drug interactions with other medications. It causes bloating. It can cause diarrhea in some patients. So it's not a perfect medicine. And I think we just have to be cautious in embracing a lot of the hype as we sort this out.
I'd like to bring in David Falkowski one last time, who's the owner of Open Minded Organics in Bridgehampton. David, I'm assuming that you speak with a number of other farmers out on the island?
Not so much on the island, in the state and across the country. I actually speak more regularly with doctors than I do with farmers. So I have two things to just bring this around towards the end here. One, I do invite anybody to come and visit and try a sample and see if this is for them. You know, we don't make any claims other than what is in the bottle and how it's properly labeled and tested. The second, and what I think is really one of the most important things for everybody who's on the line here today and listening, I'll circle back with the doctor, is just speaking about the potential for real drug interactions. So this came a reality for us in our family with somebody who's been on a long-term medication treatment for epilepsy, for seizures. And they were very eager to consume a quality CBD product. They were feeling great for the first few days, and then all of a sudden they felt like they were losing control and feeling like they were on the verge of having a seizure that they haven't had in years. Contacted their doctor. The doctor said, whatever you're doing, stop anything you've changed, stop taking the CBD. Within a day or two, got back to what he felt was more or less normal again. And as it turns out, we've discovered that CBD can modulate a certain group of enzymes in our liver that can affect, in essence, dosing of medications. And I was hoping maybe if one of the doctors could speak on this as a PSA here to, you know, let people know there are, you know, potential things good and possibly bad if we're not careful and educated.
I think that's a great suggestion. It was a concern of mine when we were putting this program together. Dr. Andriola, do you want to take a crack at this?
Yes. Well, as far as the seizure drugs, the anti-seizure drugs, we know that the CBD affects the metabolism of some of these drugs. The most significant one that a lot of these types of these patients are on that are intractable is ONFI, which is clobazam. It's a benzodiazepine. And it can, its metabolism is slowed by the CBD. Now, the study that was done with NYU being our closest site did not make patients come off the clobazam. They just measured levels, and everybody, as I do with my patients, are instructed to notify us if they get appear more sedated, because basically CBD is basically not sedating. And if so, then sometimes the clobazam has to be adjusted down. Hmm. But it's been postulated that the combination of the clobazam plus the CBD may even be synergistic in treating these very, very difficult epilepsies. Liver enzymes can go up in patients, particularly if they are on the drug Depakote. Valproic acid is a chemical name for that. Those are the predominant interactions. A few patients have had a little bit of changes in levels otherwise. And this was well documented again in the nationwide study in multiple centers, because many of these patients are intractable and are on what we say polypharmacy.
Dr. Andriel,
it's one other drug, but many.
I hate to do this, but we actually have come to the end of our program. I thank you for your time, for everything. And David, that was an excellent suggestion. Thank you for that. Thanks to all of you for being on today, and I hope that we can do this again sometime in the future.
Very interesting.
David
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. David Falkowski, owner of Open Minded Organics in Bridgehampton. Dr. Fred Latto, Regional Director for Epilepsy at Northwell Health at Great Neck. Dr. Mary Andriola is Child Neurologist at Stony Brook University. Keeber Smith-Bolden is the President and the Founder of Canna Health in New Haven and the Founder of Women Grow in Connecticut. And Brian Hurlburt is the Executive Director of Connecticut Farm Bureau. Thanks to all of you. It was a very interesting and fascinating program. That's it for our show today. I hope you got something out of it. Julie Ferdino is behind the board. She's our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Ann Lopez is the producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.